Ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. You want it, go get it.
Shazam!
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Elo.
No! The Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow.
Yo.
The ruling on the floor is made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never going to catch us slipping.
With the first overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.
3, 2, 1, yeah!
Welcome to Pass the Outlet, episode number 26. I'm your co-host, Michael Benjamin, joined as always by my wingman, Chris Patrick. Chris, how you doing tonight, my brother?
Mike, I'm as good as one can be when your team isn't in the playoffs and the playoffs are starting tonight. But that's what we're here for, right? We're going to break it all down. And the good news is we're still going to have basketball and good basketball into June, at least I'm hoping. But how you doing, bro?
I'm doing great. Yes, the playoffs are here. We already have one of the play-in games coming to a conclusion right now. It looks like the Orlando Magic are stomping the Atlanta Hawks. Trae Young, Chris was saying, 8-for-21, not showing up, unfortunately. But you guys know we are Phoenix Suns fans. And of course, we have to talk about the tumultuous season that was the 2024-2025 Phoenix Suns. And we're going to break down some of our bright spots in the outlet point guard today, as well as get into the news and the upcoming NBA playoffs a little bit further in Reddit Reacts. But if you are joining us, listening back on podcast streaming services, we appreciate y'all. We love y'all. Make sure you're following us at AZ_VSP on all socials. Man, things winded down a little bit tough for the Phoenix Suns. Okay, let's not joke about it. A lot tough, man. This season was an absolute season from hell. A lot of people are posting it as probably one of the worst seasons due to the expectations of the Phoenix Suns and absolutely falling flat, losing their last game to the Sacramento Kings to put them, oh my goodness, 10 games under 500 to finish the season. And a lot of the speculation was, would Mike Budenholzer claim and keep his seat as the head coach? And obviously, folks, we knew what happened. On, what was it, Monday? I think, oh, come on, man. I don't understand why my sharing screen has been such an awful situation recently, but here we go. We're going to hit it right here. Obviously, Monday, which was yesterday, the Phoenix Suns came out with the official announcement saying that the organization has relieved head coach Mike Budenholzer of his duties. A very, very short and precise statement, Chris. The Suns released the following statement: competing at the highest level remains our goal, and we failed to meet expectations this season. Our fans deserve better. Change is needed. Chris, right off the rip, man, what was your first reaction to the Phoenix Suns firing Mike Budenholzer?
Oh, Mike, I mean, we did talk about this a little bit on Saturday in our Heat Check podcast, which will be coming out later this week. And so I kind of, you know, we kind of saw the writing on the wall, kind of felt like we knew this was coming. I'm torn. Honestly, like, now that everything has come to light about a lot of things that were happening behind the scenes and, you know, heads that were butting, I think it was the right thing that we needed to do. Like, it sounds like Mike Budenholzer was just not the right coach for this team. I don't want to say he was a bad coach, but not the right coach for this team. I just hate the optics of firing three coaches in 3 years, and now we're going to have to go on to a fourth coach. But I think my worries were a little bit grounded maybe in being able to attract the next head coach of now, you know, some people are going to see the Suns as being a toxic organization. And now who you give the blame for that. I mean, before it was the Robert Sarver problem. Now there's people like Stephen A. Smith asking if we have a Matt Ishbia problem. So Suns are just in a really terrible spot. But to backtrack a little bit, I think, you know, having one of these 30, 32, whatever it is, head coaching jobs in the NBA is still very prestigious. And that's why they're getting 3-4 year contracts from the Suns, is because they want to know that even if you move on from me after a year, I'm still going to have a guaranteed payday and I'm not going to have to worry about having to find a new job in a year. So I think the job is still attractive for whoever might take it. But Budenholzer, I think letting him go was the right choice. I would say, I think they should have let him go in January, man. If you were serious about making the play-in and making a playoff push, do like the Nuggets did or the Bucks or any of these other teams. You got to cut ties when there's a bad situation and you're on the cusp of being able to be one of those playoff teams. You got to do what you can, and just digging your heels in and doing more of the same wasn't it. So I'll say it again for like the third or fourth time. It was the right move. I'm not sad to see Bud go.
Yeah, for me, I think I kind of allude to what you're saying about maybe letting him go January, February, when you kind of saw the writing on the wall. At that point, optics be damned, man. Sometimes changes can juice up players and get them going towards a better goal than just finishing out a season, right? Which is what this Phoenix Suns team did, because Mike Budenholzer didn't build relationships. He was hard to deal with. And obviously, when firings take place, that's when you start to hear all of the, you know, hoopla from the inside coming out. And you know, we're going to dive into it a little bit. But ladies and gentlemen, you know, kind of midway through this season, when we saw that this probably wasn't going to be a successful Phoenix Suns team, I still wavered in the facts because of it possibly being the fourth coach in 4 years, which is just always a tough look. But at the end of the day, you're going to hear it on the Heat Check podcast. BSP Tallman said it perfectly. If it's not the guy, it's not the guy. You just don't try to make it work. Even though, you know, you got a lot of capital built into Coach Bud at this point. And oh my goodness, what a disaster. The offseason starts, and I'm sure there's going to be more heads to roll. But we still got to talk about Mike Budenholzer, Chris, because you were the one who sent me something which kind of made me chuckle a little bit, if it really is true, about Mike Budenholzer telling Yusuf Nurkic that he's a bad teammate, basically on the way out the door. And then obviously Chris Haynes had his kind of report. I think they call it Haynes Briefs. It's his show.
Oh,
what
God.
A crazy name.
It's pretty clever.
But we heard the news about Mike Budenholzer asking Bradley Beal to play like Drew Holiday. And of course, Bradley Beal didn't, he took exception to that, to say the least. The quote is, "Don't ever disrespect me like that. Don't ever tell me to play like another player." Let's do another quick reaction, Chris. Right off the rip, when you heard this news, I guess, were you kind of in the camp of Bradley Beal's side saying, why would you ever ask me to do that? Or are you a little bit more concerned about like the winning mentality of Bradley Beal?
Yeah, this one's really interesting. I had to let it simmer for a little bit, because obviously my first thought is all my homies hate Bradley Beal. So it's kind of easy to take the Bud side a little bit. I think they both suck, to be honest with you. I mean, for Brad Beal to think that he's so much higher caliber of a player than Drew Holiday is kind of hilarious to me, when Bradley Beal has shown the last two seasons that he's mediocre at best. I know he, former All-Star, did great things with the Wizards, but has been injury plagued. And when he is healthy, is, you know, he can go off every once in a while, but by and large, he's a shell of his former self. Now, on the other hand, with Mike Budenholzer, it's just a bad coaching style to be like, I need you to play like another player. Why not be like, hey, I need you to play better defense. I need you to distribute. I need you to be the floor general. You know, I think there is a different way that he could have made the same point. But again, I go back to Brad Beal, the way to be like, don't respect me like that. Don't ever tell. It's like, okay. I mean, you guys are two grown adults and he's just trying to get a point across. Now, he didn't do a very good job in getting that point across, clearly, but maybe you could have asked some clarifying questions, Bradley Beal. I mean, obviously, this is just a report, two sentences, he said, she said sort of thing. But it, as you're seeing here in the tweet from NBA Central, it was verified by our own Valley's own John Gambadoro. So he's usually pretty solid on the reporting of all things Phoenix Suns. So I trust and believe that conversation happened. Not a great look for both, but honestly, a little bit worse for Mike Budenholzer, as the guy who's supposed to be the head coach, the head honcho, rallying the troops, keeping good chemistry in the locker room.
Yeah, I think all of it, like you were kind of alluding to, is just the approach. how you articulate what you're trying to get out. If you're Mike Budenholzer asking Bradley Beal to really, you know, take offense on the defensive side, right? Be an aggressive player within the system, but also understand that, you know, the success of this team is going to be Bradley Beal doing the other little things. And that was one of the just overall structural falls of this Phoenix Suns team, where nobody wanted to step out of their comfort zone and do the things that really required this team to be successful this year. I don't know about you, Chris. If I have a coach, say if I'm in this situation, obviously I'm not. I don't make $50 million a year. I think my ego might be a little bit inflated at that point. But if somebody's asking me to look at a multi-NBA championship type player, a guy who has been an all-defensive stud and who can score buckets at the same time, honestly, possibly on his way to the Hall of Fame, man, to be honest with you, when it comes down to Jrue Holiday, there's ways to ask that to be, and not exactly pinpointing out, but thinking about what that kind of player does for their team and the overall success for that unit. When you talk about Drew's time, obviously when they won in Milwaukee against us, unfortunately, but then last year with the Celtics and looking to repeat this year, which I think they have very, very high hopes for. That's what you're supposed to do, I think, as a professional, right? You're supposed to look and see what works for you, look and see what works for others, and make transitions to your game so that you can stick around and play for as long as possible. I think that's the absolute goal for most athletes. But when you talk about Supermax guys, it might be just a little bit different because those guys are set for life early. And remember what Bradley Beal's one and only goal was for this year, Chris. It was to have fun. And I don't think that he hit that goal whatsoever. Man, just lots of weird, weird stories that are probably going to continue to come out of the negativity around the Phoenix Suns organization, players, coaches, all of it. Trust me, more and more is going to be coming, and we're going to touch base on it. But we do have to touch base on one guy who we know is the face of the Valley. And that is one Devin Booker, who set the franchise scoring record this year. And the early reports are already stating that the Phoenix Suns are looking to offer Devin Booker a two-year, $149.8 million extension this offseason, basically cementing the knowledge that a lot of us had that if we do the retool, rebuild kind of thing, it's all going to be around Devin Booker. Putting him under contract for two more years, so that would be into the 2030 season, he'd make $75 million annually into his early 30s. Chris, what do you think about our boy D-Book cashing in once again, man?
I shouldn't feel so, I don't want to say disgusted by this, but he does still have 3 years left on his contract. He's 28. He'll be 29 at the end of this year when the next season starts. So, you know, three more seasons puts him at 31, 32, then two more years on top of that, 33. Okay, so that's not bad. We're seeing especially high caliber players play into their mid to late 30s. Devin Booker is surely capable of doing that. So, I mean, the $75 million is gross, but in 5 years, that's going to be the norm anyway for max guys. So it's you know, that's just how it is in the league these days with inflation, the salary cap, the CBA, whatever you want to attribute to it, that's going to be the same for any other guys. I'm kind of talking in circles to try and decide if I like this or not, but I think I do. I mean, Devin Booker wants to be here. He's expressed a desire to want to stay in Arizona for his entire career and play for the Phoenix Suns. And you don't get that a lot these days with teams. He's great for the brand. You're going to be able to sell a lot of Devin Booker jerseys. He's got this deal with Nike where he's got the book one, going to have the book two, probably the book three and four and so on. So there's a lot of upside just from a marketing standpoint for the Suns to keep him around. But also, I don't know, man, he's pretty good on the court too. I don't know if you've noticed, but he can put in some buckets. Now, he has gotten some criticism the last year or so of being, you know, kind of like a stat chaser, not really having a great plus or minus at times, but even he's said, you know, I think it was on his way out, maybe one of his last, locker room interviews of the year, that he puts a lot of this season on him. He didn't shoot the three as well. He said he wasn't as good of a leader. And they asked him kind of to clarify that. And he basically, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said he wants to be a better leader on and off the court. And I honestly think he's already doing a pretty good job of leading off the court with all the charity work and stuff he does in the community, renovating courts throughout the Valley, and just being a man of the people. A lot of love for Devin Booker. So I think it makes sense. It's smart. You want to lock up a franchise guy like this, keep him happy. It just scares me because if we're being very honest, Mike, I think we're looking at a 5-year rebuild here as far as building a contender back. I don't know what you think about that.
And that's a tough pill to swallow. I hope it's not that long, but let's be honest, Suns fans, we are probably minimum looking at the next 2 years not being in title contention whatsoever. But Chris, I think this is one of those things where when you look at that number, $75 million is really an astronomical number in terms of things and how it sits in the landscape of the NBA right now. But it just seems like loyalty is so often not rewarded. And for us to be on the other side of that, I'm okay with it. Like we already said, you're already talking about the all-time leading scorer in the Phoenix Suns history, who is going to just stat pad his way, not even by like just looking to actual stat pad, like you said, just by his sheer talent will continue to grow that number. And I think a big thing that will probably be a positive for me in terms of seeing how Devin Booker comes out hungry next year is when you go through a tumultuous season like this, you have to get introspective and look in the mirror and see, what did I do and what can I do better? And I feel like with Devin Booker entering his prime, he is the prime candidate to do something like that. So, man, it's going to be interesting to see, obviously, how this offseason rolls along and they retool and that kind of stuff. But, Chris, it sounds like you got one more point in regard to Mr. Devin Booker getting the big bag.
Yeah. And I want to emphasize, I think he definitely deserves it. I think the Suns need to do it. You'll have him locked up for the next 5 seasons. But that, you know, just because he says he wants to play his whole career here, those things are kind of subject to change. And I want to point to one player in particular, and Mr. Damian Lillard, who was fiercely loyal to Portland, but they never did what it took to build a contender around him. So if we get 2-3 years into this and it's not looking up, Devin Booker is going to be in his early 30s saying, man, I want to be in the finals again. I want to be making deep playoff runs again, like I did for 1-2 years there back in the early 2020s. So I just think it's a tale of caution that, yes, lock him up, secure him, but don't rest on it. You got to keep pushing to build a team around him. And I hope they do. I think that's what Matt Ishbia wants to do, but hopefully he's learned from some of the mistakes that have been made over the past 2-3 seasons here.
Yep, exactly. Once that contract extension is signed, then the ball is completely in the front office's court. We will see if James Jones is a part of that. We will see if Josh Bartlestein is a part of that as well. But with that being said, we got to look at what happened with the 2024-2025 Phoenix Suns, folks. I know this is going to be a tough pill to swallow. It was a hell of a season for all of us. But let's do one last deep dive. If you look at the stats here, we got the team leaders. Kevin Durant, once again, guys, say what you want about KD, but all he did was perform this year. Did only play 62 games with a couple of injuries, but 26.6 points, 6 rebounds, 4.2 assists, led the team in blocks as well. He shot 53% from the field and 43% from deep. I don't think there was any chance that you could say that with whatever happened with this Phoenix Suns team, Kevin Durant was going to have to be considered for one of those all-NBA teams because he did what he could for this club this year. But yeah, right in the middle is the shock factor, finishing last in the Pacific Division. And obviously we know we did not make the play-in, on the outside looking in at the 11th spot in the Western Conference. But Chris, the big thing, the overall, I guess, the big arch in the narrative when it comes down to this season for the Phoenix Suns, I think you can really see it within the team numbers, right? 14th in the NBA in team turnovers at 13.2, but it was just consistently bad turnovers, weird decisions by some all NBA level caliber players, which trickled down to the second unit, right? horrible defensive stats this year, 27th in the NBA with three-point percentage allowed at 37%. You know, we really didn't garner any turnovers. We saw that through, you know, a lot of our lack of our wing size and athleticism, you know, rolling out some older guys really caught up to the Phoenix Suns when you have to go and play teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets, who took the top two spots in the Western Conference. The Suns struggled against young teams. You can even talk about teams like when we lost to the Charlotte Hornets. It's crazy. But then the decision to not really bring in a true starting center, and obviously losing the relationship with Yusuf Nurkić, who after the 8-1 start did really struggle, but pivoting to Nick Richards and Mason Plumlee really killed the big man game, because you could just see we struggled in team rebounds, 25th in the NBA. Our just general presence inside was just out of alignment a lot of the time, most of that with our offensive sets as well. And Chris, like, more than half the time, it seemed like we were just flying in there with no game plan, right? It's like we didn't look at tape. We were just going to show up and show out because we had a big three. And we know in this league, when teams are put together and structurally sound, you lose, and you're going to lose consistently. And that's what happened with this Phoenix Suns team this year. But I know it's still kind of high level, but we needed to put these stats in front of everybody so they can truly understand what we saw from this Phoenix Suns unit this year. But Chris, overall, you know, let's give us some points on where you saw the downfall of this Phoenix Suns team this year in 2025, which left us on the outside looking in the playoffs.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's the thing. Like, everyone wants to try and pinpoint the one spot where things really turned. And you can go back. People even want to look back at what move the Suns made that really started the downfall. But the truth is, like, it wasn't any one thing to where what got us to where we are now. And it was the same thing in the story of the season. All these numbers are pretty bad. We couldn't rebound. Colin Gillespie had something like only two fewer offensive rebounds than Kevin Durant did. So, dude, he might be 7 foot, but he's not great at grabbing offensive boards, and it's fine. He does hang around the perimeter a lot, but hey, guess what? Colin Gillespie's a guard too, and he's also all of like 6'3" or something like that. So you kind of knew what you were getting in KD as far as that goes, but I think Mike, if I had a dollar for every time I texted you watching a Suns game complaining about the turnovers, it's not like it was, oh, shucks, they got it. It was like, what were they thinking? Like, it was egregious, like passes at the feet, passes when guys aren't looking, lazy passes, and the defense especially, man. I mean, being one of the worst teams in three-pointers allowed, not forcing hardly any turnovers. I think this team had an inflated sense of self coming into the season where they thought, man, we got this big three, and not only a big three, but big three offensive talents, where Devin Booker said something about like, oh, I don't know how they're going to guard all of us. Well, they figured it out on pretty much almost every other team in the league figured it out, because we struggled even against bad teams. You mentioned the Hornets. We barely beat the Spurs, and they were hardly playing anybody. No Wemby, and you know, all their starters were basically sitting. I know that's the end of the season, the garbage time of the season, if you will. But it's just really bad. I think we've talked about it throughout the season. This team just didn't really have a soul. It didn't seem to have much heart out there, and it was honestly on both ends of the court. I wanted to share this stat that I thought was fascinating. The Suns only won 3 of the 17 games they played without Kevin Durant this year. And now we're going to move on from him. And not only did they lose, you know, what would that be, 14 of those 17 games? They did it by, I think, 11 plus points every time they lost without Kevin Durant. So it wasn't even close. So you're going to lose a big offensive guy. Of course, that means Devin Booker will probably have to step up next year. But I think the thing that really needs to be the primary focus of this team is improving defensively, and the rest will come. I mean, it's a adage as old as time, and it'll be around forever, Mike. What is it? Defense wins championships. And this team didn't have any defense. And I think that's the biggest tail of the tape.
Yes, yes. No defense kills you, because especially with this team, the way that they were built, so top heavy, you knew that, you know, the big three with Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker, you were hopeful that Bradley Beal and Devin Booker could take steps on the defensive side. but their prowess is still on the offense. So you're banking on them just outscoring the ever-living hell out of everybody. And what happens? Yes, you know, they had the third best three-point percentage in the league this year with 37.8%. They upped the amount that they take as well, 12th in the league, and they were 7th in makes. But 113.6 points per game, you're in the bottom half of the league. If you can't play defense and you're not outscoring teams, you're going to end up under 500, and that's exactly where this Phoenix Suns team did. I want to take a look once again at the big three. Kevin Durant, we already talked about it, 62 games, dealt with some injuries once again, but did lead the team in scoring. Devin Booker had a pretty healthy season, Chris, 75 games, so he only missed 7, I believe. But you were correct, right? Didn't shoot that well from outside, 33.2%. Worst since 2018 for Devin Booker, but he still did average 25.6 points, which was just under Kevin Durant with 7.1 assists and 4.1 rebounds. Then, of course, Mr. Bradley Beal, Mr. PTO man, as some have started to call him, only 53 games played this year. Are we surprised, folks? No, this is what Bradley Beal has done for the past 8 years. Don't expect it to change. You might have one-time outliers like Chris Paul did this year playing every single game for the San Antonio Spurs, but I don't know if Bradley Beal is honestly built for that, folks. He had an okay year stat-wise when you look at scoring. He averaged 17 points, but 3.3 assists, 3.7 rebounds, consistently playing over 30 minutes. There was just no fit for Bradley Beal, and he didn't want to play into a different type of role than to just be the guy. He doesn't know how to do it. It's just the truth. I'm sorry, man. We did have two other guys who averaged double digits this year, Grayson Allen and Tyus Jones, who I think, Chris, at the end of the day, honestly might be one of the bigger disappointments for the Phoenix Suns this year. After we thought getting Tyus Jones on that type of a deal, almost be it a prove-it deal, and shoring up a position that the Phoenix Suns struggled with last year, you know, having to man the point guard position with Beal and Booker, Tyus was the healthiest guy on this team this year. He played 81 games. He did lose his starting spot down the stretch where he complained about it. But at that point, everybody's kind of complaining, especially after you get kicked out of the playoffs. But 10.2 points, 5.3 assists. He did shoot pretty well from outside, 41.4%. I think the other guy I got to touch on here is Nick Richards, a young piece who I think can still find his way for this Phoenix Suns team and find a way to impact, but within limited minutes. Nick Richards is just not a starting center in this league, unfortunately. But 9.5 points per game, 8.6 rebounds, shot 60.5% from the field. Chris, was there any other standouts that maybe I didn't touch on this year that you were kind of like, ooh, that had a nice season, maybe a surprise season, or just disappointing, man? Just a fall flat season like the Phoenix Suns as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I'm sorry, what am I trying to say here? It's easy to hyper focus on the negative, which was a lot of what I've been doing. I mean, I do want to highlight, we were warned by Hornets fans, don't expect Nick Richards to be the cure-all. He has his flaws. Again, his plus-minus is pretty terrible. He isn't going to help you late in games, and Bud didn't play him late in games, probably for that very reason. It's common. I mean, even we've done it. Every fan that pays attention to this team wants to write a prescription for how to fix the Suns. And we were saying, oh, we just need a true point guard. We need a guy who can distribute the rock and get it to Booker and Beal so they can just catch and shoot. And, well, it didn't work out. And Tyus Jones came with very poor defense, and that's a large part of why he lost his starting role. I will say, like, the young guys that I think we're going to take a look here at a bit, like Ryan Dunn had played some great defense. He came out shooting pretty well, but then that fell off. But he's a rookie. I mean, he's going to have to build up to it, but that's a piece that could be very, very good for you. Colin Gillespie had a very entertaining game down the stretch where he virtually won the game for us with some clutch shots there at the end. But overall, man, I mean, not a lot of bright spots. I think Kevin Durant did a good job of staying pretty healthy. I mean, I know he missed 17 games, but for a guy of his age with as many miles as he's got on the tires, for him to play that many and score average 26.6 points a game, like, the Slim Reaper is going to do what the Slim Reaper does. But again, as the conversations we've had, did that come at a detriment to Devin Booker? Maybe so. because his numbers were way down and not what we're used to seeing from the Suns. I think overall I'm disappointed that after a year of Frank Vogel, we thought we wanted to blame him. And again, writing those prescriptions, we get a good head coach in here with a true point guard, sky's the limit. Bud had a worse record than Frank Vogel and we missed the playoffs. So hindsight's 2020, I guess.
Yep. I think last guy that I will bring up that I was a little disappointed in his season was Grayson Allen. Like we said, he did average double digits, but he was unhealthy a good amount of the time this year as well. And I think putting on those 15, 20 pounds that he did really changed the complex of his game this year, unfortunately. And that was one of the fall flats for this Phoenix Suns team, structure-wise too, Chris. We just had too many guys who fit the same mold as him, right? I mean, Royce O'Neal, Grayson Allen, Ryan Dunn to a certain extent, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, they're all small wings who need to score but can't really play defense to that high of a level. You might give a little bit more of a nod to Royce O'Neal in regard to the defensive department, but I don't think there was anything that jumped off the page for him this year, right? I mean, you don't have a Mikal Bridges type where you can say, get on the killer tonight and put him in check. You didn't have that ever on the defensive side for this unit. And once again, the biggest thing I think for me is this team is too old now, man. The changing of the guard is happening in the NBA. I mean, you can even look at it with like, teams like the Los Angeles Lakers. LeBron James is damn near 40 years old. Anthony Davis, we know, was Anthony Glass Davis, right? What do? They bring in one of the younger, new generational superstars in this league, and they find themselves with a top three seed and, you know, a real, real high chance to at least make the Western Conference Finals. But, Chris, we're going to have a lot more introspective looks on the Phoenix Suns, I'm sure, as the offseason goes along, as more heads start to roll, as eventual trades happen as well. We'll get more introspective with it. But I think it's time to roll on to the outlet point guard. And you kind of alluded to it. We said, if you are watching back or if you're going to watch the Heat Check podcast this upcoming year, is we do have to have some positives from such a crappy season for the Phoenix Suns. And our positives were the young guys. So we got to take a look and really just kind of think on what we liked from Oso Igodoro, Colin Gillespie, and Ryan Dunn and see what their future might look like with the Phoenix Suns. But I'm going to roll these clips, Chris. I'll do a little breakdown just to start, and then we're going to pass it to you. But we're starting with Oso. Obviously, the Valley kid went to Desert Vista, athletic big. I still think he has to put on some size if he truly is going to compete on a consistent level in the NBA. But you see a tough turnover there, but the hustle back, the want to make up for your mistake. That's what you always see from young guys. And his patented floater, man, that's just a thing of beauty, man. I honestly love that. But here we go, man. Probably the biggest surprise for the Phoenix Suns this year, getting Colin Gillespie from the Denver Nuggets. Nice little pocket pass there to Nick Richards. And then he has this just survive dribble from Steve Nash. I think since Steve Nash is on that podcast with LeBron James again, they kind of did a little deep dive for what he does with that. But Colin had a nice, nice follow-up after this game against the Los Angeles Clippers. But 33 games overall, 9 starts, shot 43.3% from three. But this is the big one, man. What do you think is really going to be the upside for Ryan Dunn? Is he going to be kind of a lethal shooter eventually from the corner? You know, he is really, really keen and athletic getting to the basket right now. I think there's a lot of improvement to come from his offensive game. But when you can get energy plays like this, the big slam on Giannis Antetokounmpo, there's a different type of juice that really flows into your team after this. And we know specifically from this play in this game, as the Phoenix Suns ended up winning this game, which was right in the midst of their fake 4-game winning streak where people had hopes that this team was going to make the playoffs. But Chris, we're going to let this one finish out as we can see Ryan just punching it home one more time, D-Book getting excited, but let's roll it back. What are you liking? What did you see from Oso this year, man?
Yeah, also, I definitely agree. I think it's hard to say someone's a small 6'10", but I think he needs to put on some muscle. and bulk up a little bit to be a true center and less of a power forward. I thought he obviously shows a lot of heart, a lot of hustle, has a lot of good touch around the rim, doesn't have very much of a long range. He's pretty limited now. You wouldn't have said 20 years ago that you need your center to be able to shoot at the perimeter, but it's a new NBA, and I would like to see him, if he is open on the perimeter, be able to knock down those jump shots a little bit more. But a lot of hustle. I mean, I think that's going to be the story for all three of these guys. Is they? I mentioned earlier this team not really having much heart, but if anybody did, it was these three. Also, especially, I mean, being the hometown kid, we've had a couple of those guys on the roster in the past, but I always love that story. So I'm really intrigued. He's going to come at a good value for many years to come, and I look forward to seeing the development of him. But I think he had to play more than I think we would have liked him to or would have expected him to this year.
Yeah, exactly. Especially to start, man. There was a couple of those games where Oso had to start, or he was just getting a lot of early consistent minutes because Yusuf Nurkic was basically cut out of the rotation by Mike Budenholzer, obviously, as the reports are saying. He told Yusuf it was a bad teammate. I still think that's absolutely crazy. I honestly hope that happened, because that would be just a perfect chef's kiss to Yusuf leaving and then Mike Budenholzer getting the kick out of the door less than 24 hours after the last game as well. But, man, yeah, let's talk about Oso a little bit. I think I love that you talk about the Valley aspect, being a Valley kid, and his ability to honestly possibly be one of the best homegrown talents that we've seen for this team. I think a lot of that can fall into, obviously, his general size. But he seems to be a guy who understands where his limitations can fall flat, right? Which is, honestly, on the offensive side, shooting outside. We saw plenty of memes of him from his warmups this year, folks. We all saw it, but you didn't really see it happening too much. And if you can get that energy and athleticism at the rim, making, you know, some nice lob plays, attacking the basket, this is a play that I love right here. I mean, he's getting this at the very top of the key. It's two steps and he's at the basket. That's what length can do for you. And that's what this team sorely, sorely missed this year. And like I alluded to beforehand here as well, is you make a tough turnover, you know, you get stonewalled by Anthony Davis trying to make 1-2 dribbles, and it's a tough pass to Max Christie. But you can see, look, Grayson Allen literally doesn't put any energy into running back to maybe make a stop. But there's Oso understanding that it was his fault in the first place, so he's got to make up for it. And those kind of plays, Chris, at the end of the day, are winning plays, right? You can live with the turnover, but it's how do you adjust and address your mistakes, man. But this floater, his floater game, this is where he needs to live. This is his bread and butter, man. Finish 8 feet away. He's going to have plenty of opportunities, especially against slower guys like Kristaps Porzingis, and he's going to make his money doing just that. But yeah, he doesn't have to be a starter anytime soon, or else that's what we do not hope for Oso Igodoro. But Chris, Colin Gillespie, man, surprise of the season? Is that how you're feeling?
Yeah, honestly, I was kind of like, where did this guy come from? And I was talking to my brother actually about a week ago, and I was like, man, I really like how this kid plays. And he's like, yeah, you know why you like how he plays is because that's how you try and play. That's the kind of player you try to be on the court. And I was like, you know, maybe you're kind of right. And I know
see it.
That Clippers game right there. I know Lawrence loves that. I know Lawrence loves what Colin Gillespie's doing on our boy James Harden, another Valley guy. But no, Colin Gillespie, man, honestly, like having a good solid 3-point shot, having a solid handle, really good court vision, not rushing anything. A lot of people forget, or maybe don't know, that he's the forgotten guy from those Villanova championship teams that were play. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong here, Mike, but he was there with Brunson and Bridges and that whole group. I think I'm forgetting one person, DiVincenzo, when they went on their run. But Gillespie's sneaky good, man. And, you know, I think for a team that's rebuilding, I hate to say that. I hate that we have to say that now, but we are rebuilding. He's a good value buy and someone you can rely on, I think, in the second unit. And honestly, I think he played you know, a lot better than Grayson Allen in a lot of times. And that was kind of, you know, I think they play somewhat of a similar style. Gillespie's more of a point guard than Allen is, but ultimately doing the same type of things is playing defense, shooting the three. I'm really impressed with the kid. I honestly, he did come out of nowhere. He was on that Nuggets championship team, but I don't think he really hardly played whatsoever, if at all. Good find. Honestly, real good find.
Yeah. To a certain extent, you could say a little bit of Grayson Allen. I think Grayson is really just focused on, he's become really a shooter at this point in his career. But Colin can kind of do it all with the basketball in his hands. I mean, I love this little pick and roll action with Nick Richards. You didn't see Nick Richards pulling up that much from there, but that's a beautiful, beautiful pocket pass that you always want to give your bigs the opportunity to create a play there. And he's going to consistently do that, like you say, in a second unit to get his guys good looks. But this is one of my favorite plays of this year from Colin, from anybody on this Phoenix Suns team. And during the broadcast, they even said it, man. It's the shades of Steve Nash. How many times did we see Steve Nash dribbling in circles in the paint? Even back in Nash's days, the paint was a lot more crowded because there weren't so many big guys shooting. So everything was more compact. But yeah, just keeping that dribble alive until you can make a decision to either find a teammate for an option to score or get deep enough to finish and be confident in your little floaters or, you know, layups against the big 7-footers like Ivaka Zubac, which is, you know, very impressive for any guys of that smaller stature to finish like that. But this is where he's going to make his bread and butter as well, especially if he's going to continue to shoot over 40% from three. When he gets those opportunities to make big shots from outside, the one thing that we always thought about this Phoenix Suns team was with the big three, all of these other guys were going to have openings and options to make and take big shots. And in the small amount of opportunities, it seemed like Colin Gillespie seemed to take advantage of them. But excited to see, and let's make sure, you know, there's a couple of those guys that we always say after every season, let's make sure to bring them back. I always go back to the Arizona Cardinals the previous two seasons where I said, let's make sure to bring Greg Dortch back, but Colin is one of those guys. But let's get into Ryan Dunn here, Chris, our first round pick, which we know the Phoenix Suns do not control any of them until what, 2032, 2033. We do have one this year, but I believe it is Cleveland's. So with Cleveland, the number one spot, probably a shoe into the Eastern Conference Finals, that's going to be a high pick. What did you like from the young gun, Ryan Dunn, this year?
Man, I think I can speak for all Suns fans when I say it's the defense, man. We had the Mikhail jail with Mikhail Bridges. He's gone. So now I think it was, what was it, the dungeon now? You're putting him in the dungeon? Oh, man. Honestly, like when we were watching through this the first time, and real quick, I got to say, Lawrence, it wasn't personal, I promise you. Like we had to go through Colin Gillespie. I will say, last thing I'll say on Colin Gillespie is I like that given the opportunity, he took advantage. And those opportunities are emphasized and highlighted a lot more when you're not a guy that's going to typically be considered for playing time, quite frankly. And so I think for him to perform like that, to even make us ask the question of should he be getting more playing time, is incredible. But Ryan Dunn, obviously, man, the hustle, the defense, the heart, showing just a lot of potential. I don't think I'm the only person who's kind of seen some shades of Sean Marion in a lot of ways, with the way he can hustle and elevate, spread the floor, and make just smart decisions. I mean, it really goes for all three rookies. They were smart, high IQ basketball players. And I think in the new NBA, the new generation, they grew up living, breathing, eating the game. I don't know if you can eat the game, but they were in these club leagues and the youth camps and just real students of the game. And with the internet these days, I mean, doing research and looking up those intangible things, studying film, it's so much easier. It's right at the tip of your fingers. You can do it on the bus, in the classroom, after school, in bed, anywhere. And so these kids are smart, and Ryan Dunn is no exception to that. I think the defense was something that we needed, and he was one of the best defenders. And for your rookie to be one of the best defenders on your team isn't great, but we'll take what we can get, quite frankly. And so, again, same as Oso, I think the sky's the limit for him, man. If he keeps getting opportunities, he keeps working on his craft and improving year after year, he's gonna be a cornerstone for this team. I think he could find himself as a starter, which he did start quite a few times this season when guys were out. So again, I just can't stress enough how much high potential there is, and I hope that he continues to build on it.
Yeah, 74 games total this year for Ryan Dunn, 44 starts, Chris. I don't think that is bad at all for, you know, a later first round pick, a guy who probably didn't think he was going to start a lot this season, but able to get into the fold, man. 6.9 points, 3.6 rebounds, only 0.5 steals and 0.5 blocks per game, but he did only average 19 minutes total. Because we also have to remember, for some inexplicable reason, Mike Budenholzer pulled the plug on both of these young guys towards the middle of the season and stopped giving them minutes for some absolutely weird reason. Even when we were losing, like, you always have to keep, or you almost have to kind of compromise to the point where it's like, yeah, I have some of these veterans, but it's not working. Why are we not trying to see what's made out of these young guys? I always don't understand that when it comes to coaches, whether it be ego or whether it be, you know, top-down communication, if, you know, people are telling him he can't. But there should have never been a situation where specifically Ryan Dunn and Osa Igudoro were not playing and playing in every single game this year for the Phoenix Suns, especially when we were in a downward spiral. Like, there was no shot that these guys shouldn't have been continuously getting the opportunity to grow their games and see what they can really be made of to be a part of this future, to be a part of this franchise for the long term. Because we know where the Phoenix Suns have handcuffed themselves, being in the second apron and paying three guys $150+ million. You got to live off rookies for the next 5 years, guys. So I'll pull it back here one last time before we move on here. But if Ryan Dunn continues to work on his outside game, he shot about 43% overall from the field, but only 31% from three. You can see his shiftiness. Those are the type of plays that once you become somebody who is considered a dead-eye shooter, you're going to have those harder closeouts like you see from DeMar DeRozan. And all it takes is one jab to the right, and he's off to the races with a beautiful touch pass to Oso into his patented floater as well. But let's let this one run one last time. The play of the year, absolutely play of the year, the jam on Giannis. I'm excited to see what happens with Ryan Dunn. And Chris, I think we're at the point as well. Ryan Dunn cannot be considered a leverage piece to just get Bradley Beal out the door, right? You don't have enough young pieces in this organization already to leverage someone like him just to get off $50+ million, technically $110 million of Bradley Beal for the next two seasons. It doesn't make sense at all, because you have to start building some of these young core guys to be a part of that next group of success.
Ugh. I didn't even think about that, man. Why'd you have to put that in my head? You're right.
Unfortunately, it's something that you have to keep in mind, because we also have seen the track record of Matt Ishbia. Matt Ishbia loves stars. He wants to bring in stars. And what do you have to do in order to get stars? You have to give up leverage pieces. And Ryan Dunn is completely one of those guys. I mean, I think he was well deserving of getting that rookie sophomore game nod during the All-Star game, you know, because he was almost forced into the committee early in the season when, after the 8-1 start, we started to struggle. But he showed himself. And there's always going to be ebbs and flows for a rookie season, and we specifically saw that on the offensive side. But there's so many more positives when it comes down to keeping Ryan Dunn on the floor, especially on the defensive end, because I still think that glaring weakness for the Phoenix Suns is the lack of youth, the lack of size. And you got to have some kind of cornerstone piece, and you got to start somewhere. And I think Ryan Dunn is that guy. But yeah, Chris, yeah, go ahead.
Just real quick, I just got to add to that, because now that you've put that in my head, it's got the gears turning in it. It's like, man, I'm all over the place. But like, if this Suns team does that, it's like when we had to get rid of DeAndre Ayton, and you gave up Tumani Kamara to the Portland Trailblazers, and now he's breaking out and looking like a real raw talent. You can't just keep trying to offload these guys, because then you're just going to the garbage heap and signing mid-level exceptions and minimum contracts from guys that obviously don't have many prospects to sign elsewhere. And especially now that this team is far less attractive once you get rid of Kevin Durant, and you're not coming off of a playoff run, and you literally just missed the playoffs, and you have no first round draft pick this year. Like, if they do that, then they will show their entire fan base that they learned nothing, and that they're digging their heels in, and that we're looking at a really dark time period for this team. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that they don't do that, or they just somehow manage to get some spectacular return that blows all of our socks off. But they're going to have to really, really bamboozle a team to be able to get rid of Brad Beal. I mean, it's just the fact they're already talking about a buyout or just outright waving and stretching him. So they're exploring all options, but I'd almost be willing to put a house payment that Brad Beal's not going to be on this team next year.
I will double down with you as well. And I just hope it comes down to a situation where Bradley Beal, I don't know if they're really going to go a buyout route. He might be okay with it, because he's going to get all that money possibly up front, and you can add on top of it. I mean, that's a win-win at the end of the day, but there's no shot that Bradley Beal is excited to stay here if that is truly what he is thinking, even though it is what he said. Either way, Chris, this offseason is going to be a long offseason. I think a lot of the things that we're looking at now, if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, is obviously what happens with the front office, with what happens with the head coach once again. You know, what the rumblings are. People really like Bob Myers and Willie Green. We will see as time goes on. We will do even more deep dives. But at the end of the day, I think the biggest thing for me, Chris, is seeing how many times Matt Ishbia's hands are in the cookie jar moving forward, because we know the personnel decisions have really come from him. And it hasn't worked. So he's got to start putting it in the hands of the basketball people to turn this thing around sooner rather than later. Because if not, Chris, then we are looking at 5 to 7 years before this team is truly back to being completely competitive and possibly garnering for a championship like in 2021. But that's all I got for the outlet point guard. And that means it's time for Reddit Reacts, man. What do you got for us this week?
And I think we have some good ones here that'll be able to continue the conversation and continue to allow us to vent our frustrations and maybe laugh through the pain a little bit. I mean, Lawrence is right. If nothing else, if there's no other options left on the table, you stretch him, get rid of the headache. You eat that $19-20 million a year. Luckily for us, they did just put, I was reading, they put some new provision in where instead of it being $25-30 million a year that we'd have to eat, you can actually stretch it out a little longer. I think it has something to do with the second apron. I could be wrong, but anyway, let's go ahead and look. I got some Reddit reacts. You know, our best friends over at r/Suns, they're very polite. If you've never been on Reddit, go over there. They value everyone's opinion, and they won't downvote you into oblivion for going against the grain a little bit, I promise you. So I think just to dip our toes in, I'm actually going to share an X react, a Twitter react, if you will. And this goes back to something we were talking about. It's from at Legion Hoops. Tyus Jones says it was frustrating losing his starting point guard spot on the Suns, per I Am Dana Scott. He plans to explore the market this offseason. And user Brandon Awadis retweeted this and said it was frustrating watching him not play any defense. And man, again, that's why he lost his starting role. I guess, Mike, with this one here, I want to, you know, kind of have a little conversation and ask you, Tyus Jones took the 1 year deal here, kind of a prove it year to come on a very promising looking team. Do you think he hurt his market value with the way he played this year?
1,000%. I mean, I haven't seen the numbers, but is he the assist to turnover ratio king anymore? I don't think there's any shot that he can't be after this year. I mean, he started a lot of these games, but yeah, unfortunately, at the end of the day, Tyus Jones didn't make a difference for this ball club, because the one positive you did see out of him was he made some plays on the offensive end, but that wasn't completely what we needed him to do. Like, we needed him to be some part of a defensive style for this Arizona, for this Phoenix Suns club. And it didn't pan out, man. He is a little bit undersized when it comes to the point guard position. But I think, you know, Tyus Jones is still a good ball player. He's still a very, very comparable backup point guard in the NBA for sure. I mean, you can't tell me that the Memphis Grizzlies are not missing him. I mean, obviously, same for the Washington Wizards, but the Wizards have been a mess for a while now. But yeah, I mean, if you have this stink attached to you, there's always going to be negatives that come with it. And he probably lost himself a couple of M's for next season. But there's no shot that a team isn't going to look at what he's done, because he has the tape over the past couple of years comparative to, you know, just one-off situations. What do we always say? Why are we surprised that Bradley Beal only played 50 games? The tape is out there for six seasons prior to that. We should have expected this. We shouldn't have expected anything else. There's always a little bit of, you know, outliers, one-time situations when it comes to players and how they play. But I think it was, once again, there were a lot of issues with this Phoenix Suns team, but it truly wasn't built properly. And Tyus Jones wasn't a guy who fit into what this team truly needed this year. It's funny. Do you know who this Broadus guy is?
No, not a clue. Just some random...
Yeah. You never heard of him? He's like a big Suns super fan on YouTube. He has a pretty good presence. He's the brother of FaZe Rug. I don't know if you know who that is.
Like FaZe Clan? Like
FaZe Clan, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but he's a huge, huge Suns guy. The Suns bring him out, it seems like, every season to go watch a game, and he does media stuff with them. So, yeah, it was frustrating to not watch him play any defense, Broadus. I can follow suit on that for sure.
Yeah, I just saw that and I was like, yeah, I think that's any Suns fan can get behind that. Like, sure. Yeah, Tyus, I'm sure it's frustrating to lose your starting spot, but at the end of the day, you just take a long look in the mirror, buddy, and I think you can figure out why that one happened. I mean, it's the same reason why Bradley Beal had lost his starting spot there for a little bit too, right? But you can't have your $50 million third head of the lopsided dragon sitting on the bench for too long. So, but I mean, I guess since we're talking about Bradley Beal, we'll go into this next one. This actually is from r/Suns and user JC Dillinger 94. It's a meme with Devin Booker and Bradley Beal for you audio only listeners. And on the left is Devin Booker saying, "Beal, I'm carrying the team by myself and KD is gone. I need help to make the play in." And on the right is Cheese and Bradley Beal. And he said, "I still have the best job in the world, and I still have my no trade clause, so I'm smiling every day," which is an actual Bradley Beal quote. He actually said this, and I had to look it up the first time I heard it, because I honestly couldn't believe it. Because this is after the trade deadline, and he knows, I believe it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this comment was made after the trade deadline. He already knows the fans hate him, and largely hate him because he was so unwilling to be flexible with that no trade clause. And I should mention that in this post, the user JC Dillinger included a clown emoji as the only caption accompanying the meme. Mike, is that fair? Is this clown behavior from Brad Beal?
It seems like Bradley Beal just never knows how to read the room, to be honest with you. Some of his remarks are always just not complete head scratchers, but it's like, I don't know if I would have went that route. You know, there's going to be a lot of vitriol for Bradley Beal until the day that he is not on this team, unless if for some wild reason he is back with the Phoenix Suns next year and helps us make the playoffs and plays 75 games and is an all NBA caliber type of talent. But come on, folks, you really think that this guy is going to be able to turn it around at this point in his career? The amount of injuries that Bradley Beal has had. I mean, Chris, didn't we have basically kind of like a homework assignment at one point this year to look into the amount of different injuries that Bradley Beal had? The hamstring, the back, the ankle, the shoulder, the wrist. Like, it was never ending.
The big toe.
In the two seasons that Bradley Beal has been here, that's all it's been, man. So, yeah, I mean, it's wild to see him kind of basically like flash that in the face of people saying like, hey, look at me, I have a no trade clause. It's like, dude, we know that, because the only thing that everybody only ever talks about you now at this point, it's not your game. It's that you have a no trade clause and you're the only other guy in the NBA that has it other than LeBron James. Like, you really want to be known as that? It seems like he is okay with that because he's laughed all the way to the bank. Man, these past couple of weeks with the memes and like the video posts that have come out, whatever. Like, have you seen some of those clips of him talking to some of like AAU kids about how like none of y'all can guard me? Or it's like, you want what I have. I have generational wealth. My folks don't have to work and that kind of stuff. It's true. It's true. But, you know, the same way that Mike Budenholzer probably needed to take a step back and see his proper approach in the words that he talked to Bradley Beal about wanting to play like Jrue Holiday. That's sometimes it seems like, okay, a lot of the times it seems like Bradley Beal needs to consider that as well, but he literally just don't give a damn. And at this point, Chris, I am probably, you know, along with a lot of other Phoenix Suns fans, it's good riddance to Bradley Beal. And I think it is officially cemented. This might be the worst trade the Phoenix Suns have ever made in the history of this franchise. And that's a tough pill to swallow. But what can you do?
Yeah. And that's saying something, man. That is really saying something. I think we go back to what you said a minute ago. You're absolutely right. His inability to read the room is just outstanding. And him, I don't know. I don't want to say not understanding the optics, because I want to believe he understands the optics. I don't think he's a dumb guy. I just don't think he either doesn't care or he doesn't realize. And I didn't see the whole AAU thing you're talking about, but I did see one of our last games against the Golden State Warriors where Steph Curry drilled a three in his face and he's laughing and clapping and he loves it. And I get it. He just wants to have fun and he was having fun. So, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, can you really be that mad at a guy who's telling you exactly how he feels?
No, you can't. But you don't have to like it either.
No.
I think one of the other funniest things too is like, you know, that last game at home, which was the second last game of the season against San Antonio, Devin Booker, everybody played, right? Devin Booker made it a point to come out and make a statement basically saying, even though we didn't have anything to play for, sometimes this might be the only chance that people have to see me play in person. It's not because he's leaving. It's because tickets are damn expensive, Chris. Holy crap. I know. I have half season tickets. Good Lord. They went up this year, just FYI, after an atrocious season. But, you know, they didn't even have the gumption to label a true injury for Bradley Beal to miss that final game against the Sacramento Kings. He sat because of rest. That was the diagnosis for his time. Are you kidding me? This guy sat plenty of times this season. You can't even finish it out and like just fake like you give a damn about this franchise or this season. Now we're just getting on a soapbox when it comes down to Bradley Beal. I'm so done having these conversations about this guy. All my homies hate Bradley Beal. I'm doubling down on it. But guys, make sure you tune into the next Heat Check podcast coming this week. We have some more things to say about Bradley Beal and the NTC man, the no trade clause man. Keep an eye out for the thumbnail for that too.
And I won't say it here, but we do have a fun story, a little anecdote as well within there. That should be out on Thursday morning. So be on the lookout for that. Mike, I do have to say, I want to apologize to you personally. We don't just go into this show blind. We talk a little bit, have a little bit of a game plan. And I kind of dropped the ball like Royce O'Neal on a pass from Devin Booker, because we wanted to open up Reddit Reacts talking about the NBA playoffs a little bit. So let me pull this up here. This is from X and a user at SemaJ7272. And he's got the script for the NBA playoffs right here. You guys don't even got to watch it, because it looks like the finals is going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder against the Boston Celtics. And I don't know how you feel about this, Mike, but he's saying that the script is out and it's going to be a Celtics back-to-back championship.
Ooh, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. Man, let me go on here. Let me take a look here. Chris, it's okay that you didn't start off with the playoffs, because we were just talking about the Phoenix Suns for a while. Let's talk about it some more. But NBA playoffs are here, man. Love the Oklahoma City Thunder. Absolutely just stellar young core. What the Phoenix Suns hope to be one day, especially with the assets that the Oklahoma City Thunder still retain when it comes to draft picks. But I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the shoe-in for MVP this year. You have, you know, other guys that, you know, could have been all NBA players, Jalen Williams specifically. You got Chet Holmgren healthy again this year. Yeah, they're going to be a team to really, really watch out for when it comes to the Western Conference. Lawrence, I know you said the Clips winning it all. I don't know. I think the Clippers could make some noise this year because James Harden and Kawhi are playing some of the best basketball right now. And sometimes we know that's all it takes. It just takes a run. But having to go up against the Thunder, it might be a buzzsaw. But Chris, I hate to say it. I'll let you touch on the West before we touch on the East as well. But the Los Angeles Lakers might just have a route right to the Western Conference Finals. And that makes me nervous in the first half season, not even full season, first half season after making the trade for Luka Doncic. But how are you feeling about the West, man? Who are you thinking is going to make it out of it?
Oh man, it's hard to imagine it not being the Thunder. And I know Lawrence. I mean, Mike said it. You're right. Harden and Kawhi are heating up. They no longer have playoff P, podcast P. He's not going to plague them and be holding them back. Norman Powell has had an outstanding season. Zubac is good for about 10-15 points, 10-15 rebounds. Pretty solid big. But yeah, Mike, I know VSP Tallman and I were kind of talking about the Lakers and how it is a little scary. LeBron just is a whole nother animal in the playoffs. And for him to be playing at the level he is at his age is truly incredible. Then you add Luka Doncic to the mix. Austin Reeves is playing out of his mind. That dude is an animal. I just don't know if they have the depth, honestly, to make a good run. This script here that we got leaked to us has the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference Championship. And those teams have two of the players that I absolutely hate because they're so good. And Anthony Edwards, man, he is Michael Jordan's long-lost son, illegitimate child. He's really good, really cocky, really arrogant. But, man, he talks the talk. He for sure talks the talk. But he often also walks the walk. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, growing up a Suns fan, I hated Kobe Bryant, but I had to respect how good he was as a player. It's kind of similar on the other side with Oklahoma City Thunder and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's caught a lot of heat in the last month for being a little bit of a foul baiter, living at the free throw line. I love the memes where he's just always hovering around the free throw line. But again, just an outstanding player, makes it look easy out there, incredible talent. That would honestly be a fun matchup to watch in Oklahoma City and Minnesota. But honestly, don't know if the script is too far off here. I think I do want to see Minnesota get knocked out as early as possible just for what they did to the Suns last year. And the last team I just got to comment on because they're up here, the Rockets apparently were the Achilles heel for the Phoenix Suns this season. You went to Houston and got to see one of those games, but it just seems like the Suns were never competitive against them. A very promising young team, but by no means did they have a big three or a Kevin Durant or a Devin Booker, and they still made the playoffs with a better record than the Suns.
Well, yeah, I think, those are the last two teams I want to touch on. Houston Rockets, man, catapulting up to the second seed, I don't think was on my bingo card this year, but they have some real, really nice young talent. If you think about Thompson, Jalen Green, that's why some of the rumors about the Kevin Durant trade to Houston didn't make too much sense to me, because Jalen Green was one of those pieces included with, I think, Eason and maybe Fred VanVleet, as well as like three first-round draft picks. You're telling me that the Houston Rockets think that gutting the three of their main guys and giving up extra capital in draft picks to get a Kevin Durant is going to put them over the edge? I don't see that happening, man. And I think one of the bigger things specifically for the Houston Rockets is they want to get off Jalen Green's contract because it's going to get big pretty soon. But yeah, the other team that you got to talk about, obviously, the three-time, or is it four-time now, MVP, Nikola Jokic in the Denver Nuggets. Obviously, they just fired their coach, Mike Malone. I just wonder what kind of camaraderie they have going into a playoff push. And I'm with Lawrence there. I see the Clippers beating the Nuggets right now. Harden and Kawhi duo with both of them healthy is very promising for the Clippers to at least get out of the first round. But don't have any faith in Minnesota. My Western Conference Finals, honestly, is probably Thunder Lakers, and I think Thunder make it out this year. They're just another year further along with all of their young pieces, and obviously they proved it this entire year. They're ready to go. They're ready to make a run. What about the East, Chris? I mean, Pacers, Bucks, now with Damian out, it sounds like. Do you really have faith in the Knicks? Kind of hoping for an implosion, so maybe we can trade KD to the Knicks and get Karl Anthony Towns, you know. But yeah, you're right, dude. I don't know if the script is that far off here, but what are you thinking about the East?
Yeah, no, it honestly isn't. And although the West is a complete disaster, I think it's because there's a lot more parity in the West than there is the East. I think it's very, you know, like you said there, the script is pretty on point for the East as far as I'm looking at it. With maybe a few exceptions, the Cavaliers came out the gate as the hottest team in the NBA by far, and they kept it up and played pretty well throughout. A few hiccups here and there. I question Evan Mobley's ability to be a high caliber player at times, but when you got Donovan Mitchell out there leading the charge, you're set up for success. Now, on the other side, when we're looking at that that second matchup potentially with the Indiana Pacers, what Tyrese Halliburton is doing is also very special. That is a really good guard that I wish was a Phoenix Sun, but we can't sit here and play the coulda, shoulda, woulda game. I do agree that the best possible outcome for the Eastern Conference playoff side of the bracket would be for the Knicks to have an early exit, stress some urgency for change, and maybe look to trade for Kevin Durant to where we can get a guy back in return like Karl Anthony Towns would be my preference. Crazy to say, because the prospect of potentially getting Mikal Bridges back is also quite enticing. Get that defensive charge back. He really broke out as an offensive player in his last couple games with the Suns and during his short stint with the Brooklyn Nets as well. But yeah, honestly, I really do think that the Celtics are going to be the team coming out of the East. I mean, again, another guy that I really just don't like, Jason Tatum. I like Jaylen Brown a little bit. As long as he doesn't disappear like he did in the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago, I really like the Celtics. And Kristaps Porzingis is coming back into his own. The unicorn, man. Come on.
Chris, I think you are underplaying the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is another team like the Oklahoma City Thunder that have honestly been juggernauts this entire season. All they do is spank teams. I don't think they're going to have any issues handling whatever first round matchup. Obviously, what? I don't think it'll be the Magic one. They are the seventh seed now, I think, right? They're going to probably sweep whoever they get in the first round, and they're going to handle the Pacers. And the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to go back to the Eastern Conference Finals. But with that being said, the Boston Celtics are going to make the NBA Finals again. You're talking about a team that literally ran it back with everybody, another year older with camaraderie. And when I say older, obviously I'm not saying diminished. A lot of these guys are very, very young when you talk about Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. I mean, crap, Chris, even guys like Derek White and Peyton Pritchard, it seems like the rich get richer when it comes to the Boston Celtics. But I don't see anybody else but Boston coming out of the East. And that's why we say this script might be locked in here. This is the exact matchup that I have for the NBA Finals, OKC versus Boston, which I think would be the best outlook for the NBA playoffs to have that NBA Finals matchup. Because that will be a heavyweight fight at the end of it all, man. That's one that you could definitely see going 6 to 7 games. You can't tell me that the energy in OKC would not be unmatched. It would just be something outstanding to watch. Whew. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think the Celtics repeat, Chris, which is kind of crazy. But I did say, didn't I transition my fandom to the Boston Celtics? No, I'm just kidding. But I think it's Boston again this year. They're too strong.
I was going to mention it. I had to kind of hesitate because I wasn't sure if you were ready to come out as a full-fledged Boston Celtics fan yet.
But absolutely not.
I think
– Hold on. I'll always have love for the Boston Celtics. If you guys don't know, if you're watching, I have Boston ties. I still have family back in Boston. My dad grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts. So I got a little bit of Red Sox red in me. And I don't hate the Celtics, but I don't love them like the Phoenix Suns. But it's still not like a point where, yeah, I do. And I'm like rooting for the Celtics. I'm not, honestly. This is sometimes the best playoff experiences are when you don't have a rooting interest and you're just hoping for the best ball. And for me, that's what I get this year. So at least I'm excited for that with the Phoenix Suns sucking the way they did this year. This playoffs is going to be fun, man.
Oh, yeah, I agree. When you don't have a dog in the fight, you dust off the sports betting apps, you put a couple wagers, and you're betting with your head, not your heart. And that's when you have the best chance to win, in my opinion, because I can tell you that most of the money, the hits I've had, which haven't been a lot, but I have hit a few, typically aren't when I'm betting on my favorite teams because I have a little bit of a tilt. And what I want to happen doesn't always align with what is actually going to happen. But Mike, if you got like maybe 5-10 more minutes, I got a couple more here. I think we could end on.
Let's do it. Run it, man.
All right, man. So kind of keeping in the playoff vein here, we have another one from Reddit. I believe this was from @r/NBA memes. Got to use the correct lingo here, of course. This is Reddit Reacts, and this is user Top Entertainment 945. Sun not shining in Phoenix, with an eyes emoji and a face palm emoji, says, wow, are you in the playoffs, play-in, or lottery? And then circled is all the other teams in the league, all their tiny little logos circled, and it says yes, of course. And you have a giant Phoenix Suns logo circled, and it says no, meaning the Suns are not in the playoffs, they're not in the play-in, and they aren't in the NBA draft lottery. I mean, technically they are, but the Houston Rockets own that pick. So even if the lottery comes out where the Phoenix Suns get the first pick in the draft, the Phoenix Suns do not get the first pick in the draft.
Oh, Chris, I was wondering if you were going to pull this one out. Obviously, this was all the rage on Twitter. It was floating around everywhere, all 29 teams except for the Phoenix Suns. It's a tough scenario to live in. It's obviously something that we've known for a while now, right? Since the Kevin Durant trade, well, and then the Bradley Beal trade with all the, you know, draft capital we traded and the swaps and all that good stuff. But Chris, I think one thing that I'm starting to come back to and truly remember is there was another era of Phoenix Suns basketball that was really good and really touted, and they didn't live in the mantra of caring about draft picks or young players. And you know what era I'm talking about. It was the early Steve Nash era, right? When we had all of these first-round picks that ended up being players like Luol Deng, Rajon Rondo, Nate Robinson, like difference makers in the NBA. And the Phoenix Suns always leveraged them away because they didn't care to incorporate young talent into the team that they already had, which was a hell of a team. Don't get me wrong, especially that 04-05 team. You're talking about a team that was 62-20. Steve Nash wins the MVP. Amar'e Stoudemire is a new up-and-comer and all that kind of stuff. You thought that the future was solid and that unit was going to win multiple NBA championships, and it never happened. And what happened after that era, Chris? The Phoenix Suns went through the 2010s winning 17 games, 18 games multiple times because they didn't care to leverage for a future. So this is what makes me nervous. And it's 20 years ago, and 20 years has caught up to us quick. So not a good look, but this off season can change things, obviously, with the pieces that you can garner back from trading Kevin Durant and possibly, cross your fingers, Bradley Beal. But we'll see.
Here's to hoping, bro. If someone will take that contract from us, I'll take a second round pick and a case of Gatorades. Like at this point, just get Beal off the team. But I think you're right. I'm curious to see if they go that route. I think they should try and get back some of their draft capital. Because again, goes back to what I was saying a bit ago, is like, did they learn from the mistakes and things that they did that didn't work? Or are they going to double down and do more of the same? Now, it's in the case of draft picks, it's going to be hard to do the same because you don't really have any to trade at this point. But I agree that especially wanting to continue to build this young core, and now, as crazy as to say, have Devin Booker be that veteran leader, you need the young guns who are going to have fresh legs, play tough defense, be able to get up and down the court without sore knees, and who are going to play a full 82 games. I think that's going to be really crucial as well. So I'm curious to see, but yeah, this is really sad. And It's funny because we waited. You talk about the early 2010s, the Bledsoe days, or I guess the entire 2010s and the Bledsoe days. And, you know, Suns weren't really talked about. There wasn't really much to report on the Suns. And we would kind of moan and groan a little bit about the national media not recognizing the Suns. But now we're getting a lot of recognition, but it's for all the wrong reasons and not great. But Mike, I think we'll just do one more here. I think I got a fun one to go out on. I know you have had a lot of fun playing the new Assassin's Creed game. You and I are both pretty avid gamers, we both enjoy some very different genres, but I know one game that we both enjoy playing, and that's Grand Theft Auto. GTA 6 will be coming out soon. I know there have been a lot of leaks, but this one might be one of my favorite. Breaking: Ja Morant will be a playable character in the upcoming GTA 6.
Y'all need to chill. That's perfect.
From user Dizzy Hot Wheels.
Oh, yes. What was it? So I had an adult league game last night. First week of the playoffs, we went 7-0 through the season, and we had a nice showing last night. We scored 110 points, but I got a young guy on my team, Will, who's star, superstar, man. He's probably an inch taller than me, obviously probably like 70 pounds lighter than me because he's, you know, 15 years younger than I am.
That'll do it.
He hit a three, and what do you know, Chris? He did the new bomb explosion celebration, throwing into the crowd, putting his hands over his ears. I was waiting to see. I know, you know, GTA Online has done, you know, some celebrities in there. I think at one point Dr. Dre was in one of the most recent Grand Theft Auto Online things. But, you know, Grand Theft Auto is such a polarizing video game for the world, right? Not even just the United States, for the world. I guarantee you we're going to start seeing more and more, you know, famous celebrities find their way into these type of games. And you can't tell me that Ja Morant wouldn't sign up at the drop of a hat to be in GTA 6. So maybe we will see him. I'd love to see it.
I would honestly love it. And I mean, it's crazy, like in this era of PC gaming and the mods and everything, like even if Rockstar doesn't explicitly put Ja Morant in there, there's somebody out there who's going to mod the game and find a way to get him in there. It's just great. Honestly, like, I know Ja Morant has a lot of haters and, you know, polarizing figure for sure. But I honestly kind of love it. I don't like Adam Silver more than I don't like Ja Morant. So for him to just kind of laugh in their face, and he's like, and all the meme, like, so memeable. And I don't know, Mike. I was thinking about that, like, even just in our pickup runs, I wonder when someone's going to do the grenade celebration. The fact that you had a friend do that in the adult league game is truly incredible. I don't want to say locked in. That might not be the right word, but just so focused on what's next. Like, I can't even think about doing a celebration. And shout out our guy Reggie in RS Go. He celebrates every made shot like it's a game winner, and I absolutely love the passion.
Oh yeah, he does. Oh, yeah, he does. Oh, wait, Nico had a question. Well, he asked if they're going to take his guns away, but he said it's going to be a tough look when he picks up a streetwalker with the jaw player skin. My gosh.
Wonder if they're going to let him in the club, in the strip club with the pistol, and if the strippers start running and snitching or...
Dude, but the true story is, when the hell is this game actually going to come out? Because I think the reveal trailer was like, what, 2.5 years ago? I know they said this year, but they always push it. And I'm going to be pissed if they do. But I did. Did you hear the rumor that they're going to have like basketball pickup, like mini games in GTA?
What? Shoot. That's pretty cool.
We might be seeing a lot of people transition from 2K over to GTA just to play basketball if that happens. But
well, I guess it's one. It's going to be depending on if it's cheaper to buy in-game currency for GTA or VC for NBA 2K. I mean, everyone's going to be talking about their build, and that's interesting. That could actually be fun though, if it's more like even, where like all the characters are like evenly good, and so you don't have like ratings. But no, that'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I was trying to look real quick. It still says Q3, Q4, 2025. So that means I think middle of 2026 is when it'll actually come out.
Yeah. Put that in your calendar.
Yeah, if we know Rockstar. But I think that's all I had, Mike, for Reddit Reacts. And that was a lot of fun. I think that was a good one to end on.
Beautiful. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for bringing the news today. And everybody, this was Past the Outlet, episode 26. We did our deep dive of the 2024-2025 Phoenix Suns, talked a little bit about the playoffs. I hope everybody enjoys this playoff run. I'm sure we will be back next month to talk about the NBA Finals at that point, because it goes quick just like that. But Chris, before we close out for the night, I want to pass it over to you one more time. Let the people know what's going on. Anything else you got?
Yeah, man, we just saw the incredible NCAA March Madness tournament. The Final Four ended in all one seeds. Shout out to Florida for winning that championship. I know a lot of people were critical of it maybe being a little bit more boring, not more chalk as far as it goes, but I still thoroughly enjoyed watching and building my bracket and gambling on these games. So I don't know. I wonder if the NBA playoff bracket is kind of going to be similar where it's all chalk. I mean, if it goes that way, we're looking at Thunder Cavs in the finals, but I do think it will be Thunder and the Boston Celtics. And I think the Celtics played it smart this year with not putting so much focus on the regular season, still finishing with the two seed. And now they're positioning themselves nicely to make another deep playoff run. Last thing I'll say about the Phoenix Suns, Mike, I'm here to advocate for the hiring of Jared Dudley as the new head coach. Might be a controversial pick. He is I'll call him a Suns legend. Suns legend, fan favorite, couple stints here. The people love Jared Dudley. He's been on Jason Kidd's coaching staff now for a couple of years. He's made it clear that his goal is to become a head coach in the NBA. It sounds like him and David Fizdale are being floated out. You mentioned Willie Green. They got some options, but I'm here to advocate for Jared Dudley. That's what I'd like to see. But Mike, thanks for joining me. This was fun, man.
Dudders, come on home. Chris, honestly, I might just love that. But folks, you know we're going to stay tapped in with everything in the Valley. Phoenix Suns moves. We'll keep bringing it to you. Please make sure you guys are following us at AZ_VSP on all socials. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, wherever you find it. You can also find us on Facebook, Valley Sports Plug. Make sure you guys like the video, subscribe to us here. And you can always watch the playback or listen on podcast streaming services like Spotify, all that good stuff. But once again, this was Past the Outlet, episode 26. I'm your host, Michael Benjamin. That's my wingman, Chris Patrick. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
One, two, three, four.
Ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. You want it, go get it.
Shazam!
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Elo.
The Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow.
The ruling on the floor is made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never going to catch us slipping.
With the first overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.